Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name's Robert and I'm here with Mr. Matthew once again.
Yeah, you are indeed. How nice is it to sit down and record a podcast?
Yeah, and not be sitting in a car either with all sorts of bustle outside.
Yeah, we are in a semi-studio today. It's certainly a temporary studio, but glorious day outside. I wouldn't have minded going outside to record this very show, but it's not to be, and we'll get by, and after we're finished, maybe get the trunks on and head on out.
Yeah, get the paddling pool filled up, a little bit of fun, the water pistols.
Yeah, so it's the Audio Drama Production Podcast, the show all about producing and writing audio drama, and this week, the five C's of audio drama. What was really the reason, Robert, for putting this together? I suppose it just kind of, it pulls together some of the things we thought were relevant to bring up recently, didn't it?
Yeah, we had a little think and we realised that we had a few things that we could string together, and we were delighted, weren't we, when we realised that we had a bit of an alliteration going on with the old C.
Yeah, the five C's, of course: champagne, cars, cocaine,
caviar.
Yeah, that's the fourth. We've yet to come up with a fifth. It's the four C's. So the five C's actually are characters, cast, consistency, community, and critique. So we're going to start with characters. Why do we love characters, Robert? Or why do we love certain characters? What do you look for in an audio drama character?
Something that makes them stand out from the obvious. There's a certain thought that the characters we love most are the ones that are likeable but flawed, and I think that goes a long way to making a decent character. Someone that challenges the perceptions of the world around them and manages to do it in a flawed way. You've opened a can of worms here, because I could talk forever about characters like Superman and Indiana Jones and the likes. I'll give you a bit very quickly, right? Superman is almost perfect, and a lot of people think he's a boring character. He's invulnerable apart from kryptonite. He's too nice. He's almost two-dimensional. And there's been a real struggle to make the Superman character interesting over the years. Whereas you get somebody like Indiana Jones and he's wonderful because he does all these adventurous things. But he is flawed. He screws up. He drops his whip on occasion. He gets punched in the face now and again. And then somehow by the skin of his teeth, he scrapes by. And we like him much more than we like Superman.
Yeah, I suppose, like, looking at some of the discussions we had a while back, we were having a good old laugh, though, at the flawed detective type character. And I remember I was on a train, I think it was going through Liverpool last year, and there was you know how they advertise a lot of books in train stations because people are bored on the train? Mm. And there was one for a detective, and it was like, Johnny McMurdo, he doesn't play by the rules.
Of course.
And it was about a detective who obviously has a bit of a drink problem. He's got he's divorced, doesn't have a good relationship with his kids, but he gets the job done, going against all the rules of those people in the office.
Yeah, and if those bureaucrats, those pen pushers, if you will, if they don't like it up in their ivory tower, then they can swivel on this mid-digit.
Yeah, and he gets pulled off the job, but he keeps moonlighting on it, and he eventually solves the case, but he doesn't really get any of the credit, and he doesn't want any.
Yeah, and he's got the secretary, Miss Foyle. Oh, no, sorry, she is a Foyle. Her name is Miss Foyle. I don't know.
So I suppose, like, the point here is that although you want to make your characters a bit flawed, probably, you don't want to go down the cliche route, do you? It's easy to fall into these sort of cliches. Bringing up something interesting about a character, but without just throwing it in there for the sake of it, it's not an easy thing to do, I think. And in audio drama as well, for a lot of us, I think your characters grow, especially, like, there's very few people who write a series and then cast it and then record it and produce it. So the chances are you're writing as you go, and you start to hear how the character sounds once you've got your voice actor. Their personality kind of develops in your head, and when you come to sit down and write your script, you could hear that voice. It makes it easy, I think. You know, when we when we got to the later stages of writing Aftermath, I found it very easy to write the characters because they were so familiar to me.
Yeah.
You know, recently we've wrote scripts where it's stories with characters we're not familiar with, and it's more difficult, really, because you've not got the voices in your head just yet.
Yeah, it's easy to revert to, well, what would I say? As in I, me, the person who goes here and there, or you might revert to what would I like to say, and that can be a good starting place for a story, a character in a story. Like, yeah, imagine if I'd, instead of like just accepting that overly harsh critique from my manager in my office job, what if I'd like smashed his face into a table and then said, yeah, and if you tell on me, I'm going to tell everyone that you've been embezzling or something. Like, you can start an interesting story like that with an anti-hero, but you've got to flesh out the character before you go too far with it, because otherwise the character is basically just you, and that's okay for one story, but if you do it in all your stories, then it's bland, it's two-dimensional, it's cliched, and it's everything that you don't want it to be.
I suppose as well, like, not to dwell on it too long, because we do want to move on, but if you've got a character who's got a certain type of personality, maybe they are a bit of a negative person, a bit of a naysayer, you can't just have them being 100% negative about everything all the time, or it's just going to get tedious.
Yeah.
I think you've got to throw those wee surprises in there, or at least have certain people around them who maybe bring out a better side in them. Because you can't just sort of say, well, that's the response you get from this person and that's it. Because, again, it gets predictable, it gets boring. Unless it's for comedy, I suppose.
Yeah, like if you start off by saying that you want some sort of antagonist and you want them to be a bigot for whatever reason, you don't want them to have it every time they walk in, oh, I hate different people, I tell you what. Like every time you see them, you need to think of them not just as antagonists in your main character's story, but they are also protagonists in their very own story, whatever that story is. What is their story? Why do they feel that way? Try and come up with a reason why they feel they are right. We've said that before, haven't we? That the main way to get a villain to be believable is for them to feel like they are the good guy. The only other thing I was going to say was that the importance of characters as well, even if, and especially if, I suppose, you're doing a story which is all about the world itself, like say you're doing a disaster film, obviously you've got to put characters in there, and you might end up just like putting some basic characters in, but where you're really just trying to tell the story of this tower that's on fire, you know, and the people getting out of it. It's important that you live this world through those characters. Give the people that are the audience a reason to care. I see that being the main reason that so many of these big computer graphic aided films fail, is that you never really care about the characters. Like, so what if they die? I don't care if the tower falls over or if the volcano kills them all. I mean, it's just some two-dimensional guy that doesn't get on with his estranged wife. Who cares? I've seen it all before.
Yeah, that's a good point. Again, I don't want to labour on it, but now that you say that, and traditionally I've always loved like zombie films and epidemic films and stuff like that. Mm. The reason I watch one of them is for the zombies, but when the characters are good, you don't want to see the zombies because it means there's trouble, you know?
Yeah.
People want to go out into a warehouse and investigate, and you're thinking, no, don't do that. The reason you watched the film was to see zombies,
yeah.
But you're so in with these characters, you don't want to see them, because that means trouble for the characters. So I think that's a sign of good character development.
Yeah,
with something like that.
I often found that when I was younger watching Casualty. You ever watch Casualty?
Yeah, in the like mid-90s.
A long time ago. Yeah, I'm talking about a long time ago, honestly. For anyone that doesn't know Casualty, it is an accident, an emergency.
It's a soap, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, like a regular program, obviously, every week. There'd be different characters, members of the public, and they would have their own little drama, and then someone would get hurt, obviously. And sometimes I would be watching it and thinking, wow, this is really interesting, these characters and what they're doing. Oh, crap, now they've had a car crash and it's all about that. I want to go back to, you know, did he resolve the issues he had with his father? That he felt his father. You know, let's get back to the real issue here. The bones will heal. You know, so I guess that's a good sign that they actually put enough thought into the characters, rather than just saying, "Oh, here's Mr. Smith, do driving along. Oh no, I've had a car accident. Off to the ER room." So, maybe there's a balance involved that you have to be aware of.
Yeah, well, leads us nicely into the next C of audio drama production. That's cast, because you're not going to have any characters if you don't have a cast to bring them to life. Mm-hmm. Finding a cast for your audio drama is not an easy thing. I don't think many people have, I wouldn't say got it right first time, but it's all about, you know, you work with certain people and you kind of, throughout your years as an audio drama producer, there's certain people that you seem to keep going back to because you know you can trust them. There's all sorts of factors. If you're using a remote cast, they've got to be somebody who could act, but also somebody who knows how to use a mic, who's got a decent mic, who's got a decent recording environment. All very difficult things to do, especially when you're looking for that person usually to be doing it just out the goodness of their heart, because it's their hobby, because they want to be involved. So I think that's the reason that we do see people just using a lot of the same folk over and over again, because it's people that they can absolutely trust to do a good job in bringing their characters to life.
Yeah, it's very important that they can tick all the boxes. There's no point having someone who's a great actor, but they're recording through a shoebox attached to a fax machine or something daft like that, you know? I was just talking to someone the other day, actually, about how they'd just received a small part in a well-known audio drama, and that's coming up for next episode. And he said it's just a small part, it's a one-off. And I said, well, you know what, that could be a big part in the same audio drama next time. And make sure you do a good job with the acting. But also, I know for a fact that the producer of the show pays particular attention to microphones and recording environment, and that's just as important, if not more important. You could almost disguise acting on occasion, but you can't disguise a crap mic.
Yeah, again, if Morgan Freeman wanted to do some acting for you, or Denzel Washington, and they were recording in a toilet with like a tape recorder, you know, I'm sure you could still find a part for them, but you wouldn't be keen to revolve the story around them. So
yeah, hey, Morgan, you're going to be on the phone in this scene, okay?
So with your cast as well, you need your cast. You need to be respectful of their time and what they're doing for you, don't you? We've talked about this a lot in the past, that it's always good to be upfront with people and know what you're expecting of them, know what they expect for you. So if you're writing them into this huge series, are they aware of that? You know, you asked them to do a few lines, did they think it was just for a one-off? Imagine you suddenly start dumping 20-page scripts on somebody every other week and they've just not got the time to do it. So having a good relationship with people, talking to them a lot, and just knowing what your expectations are of each other as well, being respectful of them and their time and what they're doing for you.
Yeah, and I would set deadlines as often as possible. If you don't set a deadline, they'll take forever. If you set a deadline of 2 months, they'll probably take 1 month and 29 days. If you set a month, a week, even if you said 3 days, you'll find most of them, if they want to be involved, they'll get it done in 3 days. But if they've got a week, 2 weeks, they'll take that amount of time. So set a boundary and don't be afraid to say, look, how long do you think it will take you reasonably? And they'll probably say, oh, let's say this amount of time plus a day or two leeway, and say, right, okay, well, you've got that long then.
Yeah, it's obviously, it's different for different people, but I've found that a good time frame to sort of work with is about 3 weeks, but always saying to people, like, you know, here's the deadline, but if you can't get it done by then, let me know. You know, it's not, we're able to work around it, but I think 3 weeks is a decent amount of time to shoot for. Like I say, people are different, there'll be exceptions from that, but that's the kind of time frame I've sort of gone on with the remote actors that we work with, and it's always worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I must admit, if I don't get a deadline myself, if I'm doing something for someone, I'll maybe just forget, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have Sunday midnight burned into my brain that I've got something to do. So apologies to anyone that I've been late with files for, but it's a two-way street, you know. Tell me, demand of me that I get it done, and I promise I'll do it. And tell me when I have to do it for.
And if you work with a cast on location, like in the area that you live, if you're lucky enough to have a cast that you record live with, we had an episode a couple of years ago with Betsy Palmer at Our Fair City and Monique Boudreau at Oral Stage. So I'll stick a link to that in the show notes. If you've not heard that, that's a great interview. because they talk a lot about this sort of thing, how they look after people on location and tips for that. So I'll stick a link to that in the show notes, and that kind of draws the string together on the old cast subject.
The only thing I would say as well is if you're paying nothing, you can expect nothing. You know, like, people are doing something for free. The minute it becomes a burden or a hassle, or they don't have the enjoyment that they had, you'll find their standards will slip away very quickly. You know, you're not high on their priority list, probably. I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. I'm not judging. I'm just saying be aware of it, that, you know, when you're doing stuff and getting people to do it for free, then don't expect the world.
Yeah, it's all about relationships again. It's all about, you know, being friends with people.
Yeah.
They're not just somebody that's there at the drop of an email to do something for you. You know, thanks. You should be friends with people. You should have relationships with them. And that way, you know, it's less likely that somebody's just going to drop you.
Yeah.
Like a ton of bricks further down the line.
And maybe just be prepared to have grown up and honest conversations. Somebody's taking forever. Say, look, is it a problem? You're not that keen on it? Are you struggling? Do you want me to get someone to replace you? I'll stress that you do want them, but that you need to get on with it. And if you have to replace them, if that's how they feel it should go, then do it, you know. And if everyone's honest about how they feel, then it should be a productive conversation every time.
So the next C then is consistency. This is a battle that we all fight, I think. It's one of those of how long are you going to take to write and produce, record an episode, and how frequently can you try and get these episodes out there? You still have these high standards where you don't want to be rushing stuff, but at the same time, you don't want your audience just to forget about you because you put stuff out like once a year. So it's a real battle, Robert. There's no real answer to it, is there? There's a lot of tips that we've seen. There's a lot of tips that we've kind of taken on board and given ourselves.
Yeah.
Creating shorter episodes is something we've kind of experimented with recently, and it's worked quite well. So it's just trying to find a balance between the time you've got to get this stuff done and, you know, your expectations of your audience.
Yeah, one of the main tips we heard at the very beginning of our journey into audio drama was do an entire season before you put any episodes out. And I don't know if I would want to do that, because I want to get it out there. I've made it. I want everyone to hear it.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. It's good if you can do it, if you've got short enough episodes, but maybe if you're doing hour long episodes and you're doing 10, maybe do 5 and then start putting them out every 3 to 4 weeks and get the rest of them made in that time. Depends on you as a person, but certainly avoid the extreme of making an episode and then doing a lap of honour, and then by the time you come back from your lap of honour, a month's gone by and you haven't even started episode 2 yet.
Yeah, I totally admire the discipline of those who work away for 2 years on a project and then are able to start releasing it. A famous example of that, I think, was the Leviathan Chronicles. That was certainly the way that they worked. Mm. In their first couple of seasons. I think that's what Brian Lincoln's doing just now with his new show. He's just working away on that, as far as I know. So, you know, if you can do that, brilliant. What a great feeling when you've got that amount of episodes and you could start firing them out, and you will build loads of momentum. There are downsides, of course. I mean, we talked about your characters and how they kind of come alive as you're writing and hearing them. But again, you might be writing and recording stuff, you're not necessarily releasing it. So I'm not saying it won't be possible to do that with your character development. But I think the key thing is to, like I say, find out how much time you've got and keep a record of how much time it takes to do stuff as well. That's always a good thing, is to know, like, how long it's going to take you to write a 20-page script. How long does it take to record it? How long does it take to produce it? Once you've got that data, you can kind of set yourself realistic targets. I'd even go as far as to say that you should set the bar quite low with what you're going to get done, just so that you feel like you're achieving something, like you feel like you're getting a victory. Because if you set targets and you're constantly not making them, it could actually put you on a real downer, and it could lead to you getting discouraged with the whole thing and probably giving up. So set the bar quite low with your targets, give yourself enough time, but just trying to get stuff out there is important, because there's an increasing number of new shows out there now, and people are, it's going to be easier nowadays for you to fall off people's radar if you are only getting a couple episodes out every year.
Yeah, and always try to remember that you're probably going to get quicker at doing these things. You're going to get better at it. You're going to hone your technique. Well, on the other hand, it's just occurred to me that maybe that'll be offset by the fact that as you go, you'll probably get more and more adventurous with what you're doing. So that might that might take more time in itself.
Yeah, your standards go up all the time as well, mm-hmm. and you know what you expect of yourself, and it's that slippy slope of not releasing stuff because you keep thinking it can be better, but you do still have to get it out there. It's no use to you just sitting in your DAW forever.
Yeah. I know some people set themselves deadlines for production of certain things, like, okay, on this scene, I'll give myself until Thursday. And then once it's done, you know, after Thursday, I'm not touching it again, because otherwise I'll be here till doomsday, just tinkering. So maybe that's something to consider as well. Depends what your schedule is like. You might only have 4 hours that week, so maybe setting Thursday as a deadline, for instance, is not appropriate. Maybe at X amount of time, or something like that.
Yeah, the wee series that we've been kind of putting out over the last 3 weeks, a Scottish podcast. It's an audio drama about two guys making a podcast, because this podcast is two guys talking about making audio drama. It's kind of turned on its head.
Yeah.
And they're very short scripts, like 7 pages of script, which translates into 9 minutes of audio. And we've talked in the past about, and this was going back to what Julie Hoverson said to us years ago, was that you could pretty much take an hour of your finished audio, an hour of production, sorry, an hour of work going into a minute of finished audio.
Yeah.
And it's almost been spot on, to be honest, because I've been keeping close tracks on this. There's a few reasons I'm doing this series, and a lot of it's experimentation and things like that, and it pretty much has been about 9 or 10 hours to make these 9-10 minute episodes.
Wow, really?
I mean, that is, you know, everything. Writing, planning, getting together, setting up, recording, production. But I've sat down and produced these things in one sitting as well. And it still takes a few hours to produce them, although it's a fairly basic production.
Yeah.
But it's certainly, you know, I feel if we didn't do this podcast, and if the Scottish podcast audio drama was our big main focus, which it's not really, it's just a side project, we could get that out once a week easily. I'm totally confident of that. So
definitely, yeah.
You know, if you want to do a weekly audio drama, the secret is two characters, maybe bring in another character now and then, but keep the main focus on two characters and keep it under 10 minutes, 7 or 8 pages of script, and you could probably get one of those out every week. And you'd be amazed at the momentum you build with that as well. Being a good example is Rick Cost with the Behemoth. He's putting out very short episodes regularly. And
it's, you know, one voice as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So easy peasy.
Keeping it simple, keeping it regular. So yeah, there's options out there if you do want to get stuff out more regular. But if you're going to be adventurous and create this big, huge epic, you've got to be prepared that it's going to take longer, and it might take longer to build momentum and build a fan base too.
Yeah, you're making, like, Ben-Hur, which famously had a cast of thousands. You imagine all the contracts and all the extras they had to deal with and the set design and all that, and that must have been a bit of a ball ache. So, yeah, try and avoid the huge, huge epics. Don't make Avatar on your first time around, because you might find it's a bit more of a slog than you realised.
So the next one then is community. And with community, we don't just mean the Facebook group that we've got for this very podcast, which is a great community on there. But there's all sorts of communities on the old internet. There's one on Reddit, which I've been reading recently. There's a lot of discussion goes on Twitter on a Sunday. So it's about getting to know people, isn't it? Building links with people, making relationships and getting to know folks. You don't know where these opportunities will lead to in the future, do you?
That's right. And it's easy to think, oh, am I going to have any listeners? Do people even listen to audio drama nowadays? But if you see the sheer amount of people who are just making things, you've got to assume that most of them will be listeners in their own right. And that's on top of people who simply listen to audio drama. There is an audience out there, and just being part of the community of those who make it will help you to keep that in mind, basically.
That's a good point, actually. I wonder, it must be the same for most producers. Your first 20 or 30 listeners, maybe even more than that, are probably all producers and writers in their own right. Apart from maybe your family who kind of humour you by listening to your stuff, but
That'd be nice.
they I know the people that are all listening are all creators as well. But they've got their own audiences, so it leads to this cross-pollination, cross-promotion. Anyone who's listening to your stuff is going to be looking for other quality audio drama, so it's a great opportunity just to share the wealth a wee bit with that sort of thing.
Yeah, go and listen to theirs, talk to them, get them to listen to yours, and before you know it, you're exchanging notes and you're not panning quite as much as you were before, for instance. You're maybe, you're improving in all kinds of areas. Yeah, it's definitely important to be part of this because with something creative like this, you don't know if what you're doing is right or good or whatever. It's all subjective, so it's good to see what the benchmark is, I think.
I think a good thing about the audio drama community at the moment, anyway, is that it seems to be free from sort of cliques and clubs. I think there's a real problem with that in things like film and probably game development and things like that. Any sort of creative medium, writing especially.
Novelists.
And at the moment, anyway, we've not had too much bother with that anywhere for what I've seen, and I think that's a really good thing. I like the way that people who have literally just started producing this week could rub shoulders with people at the very top of their game, and there's no, I've not really seen anyone being patronised or condescended or anything like that, which is good. Advice always seems to be given and taken on board. And we've spoken in the past about when we've ventured onto some equipment forums or that, and somebody asks a question, they get absolutely shot down in flames because they didn't know something. And
Yeah.
I'd like to see that continue. But again, the more people that come into something, you are going to, people maybe get to know each other less in the future. The medium gets bigger. Again, that's a good thing that it gets bigger. But what I'm trying to say in a really long-winded way is take advantage of the way things are at the moment and just get to know as many people as you can, get to become friends with as many people as you can, because it's, again, you don't know where it'll lead in the future. You'll get some great opportunities, some great collaborations, and make some really good stories.
Yeah, I do worry sometimes that there might be a little bit of snobbery involved in audio drama when it comes to old-time radio and fan fiction audio drama. Like, not everyone's a fan of those things, and I've got to confess, I'm not a huge fan of either of them. I don't really know old-time radio. I'm aware of it, but I'm British, so I didn't ever listen to it in the States. Fan fiction. I haven't listened to a lot of fan fiction. I've heard a few things, and I thought they were all of a fairly low standard, to be honest. And I'm worried if that will come across in my everyday conversations with people, and they'll think I'm a bit of an elitist or a snob or whatever. Maybe I am. If I am, I apologise. Maybe it's something that we should be aware of, that there will be niches when it comes to audio drama. People genuinely do love old-time radio. Some people do, and why shouldn't they, I guess?
Yeah, I think we're all into different things. I'm the same, I'm not a fan fiction fan, although one of my favourite shows is Keek's Quest, which is, a fan fiction. Old time radio, again, it's not something I know much about either, but at the end of the day, no matter what somebody's producing, when they sit down with the headphones on to start editing voices and sound effects together, they're making audio drama. Whether it's something I like, whether it's something you like, that's really irrelevant. It's the process that they're going through. We all go through the same things. We put our shows together. We have that moment of dread when we put it out there, and you wait to see if there's any feedback. You look at the download numbers. We all go through these processes. We all have these moments where we kind of doubt ourselves and think, I'm not very good at this. So it's not too relevant. Nobody's going to like everything.
That's right.
As I say, we've all got our own tastes, but it's important just that we, I suppose, are together as a community for what we experience producing this stuff, for writing it, for putting it out there.
Yeah, and as a sort of olive branch, if somebody said to me, "Oh, would you listen to this to give me some feedback?" And it was, if it was old time radio or if it was fan fiction, I would, and I would give it as open minded a critique as I could. In fact, I'm not going to give you exact, but I did a little voice for a piece of fan fiction just recently.
Well, you play the Doctor, did you?
No, not this time. The Butler. but stay tuned for details of that in the future, maybe.
We've nearly ventured on a critique, but I just wanted to add a few more things into community.
Yeah.
I think being willing, having an openness to learning, no matter how long you've been doing this, you don't know everything. It's always good to just try and learn stuff, learn from people. You might even learn from someone who has a lot less experience than you just because they've worked on a certain thing. So I think having that attitude is really important. Every day is a school day. You know, there's barely a day goes by now where I don't learn something about a piece of equipment or a piece of audio. It's an attitude thing, I think. The minute you think that you're an expert is the day that you're doomed, isn't it?
The minute you think there's nothing more for you to learn, yeah, you're right, because you're not going to learn it. And that's it, and your brain stops.
Another wee thing is writing reviews. We all love getting reviews on iTunes and other directories, but I don't think we do enough of it, to be honest. Certainly, you and I are guilty of this. We listen to stuff, and we'll talk shortly about some of the stuff we've listened to recently. But it's taken that minute to go and do a review. A producer loves to see a review coming through on somewhere like iTunes, but we just don't do it very much, do we?
Yeah.
And it's a way to make somebody's day. You don't know that person might be on the verge of quitting, and they look at their phone and see a review one day and it just keeps them going. So I think it's important when we like stuff to actually tell the people, even if it's not a review, you know, getting in touch with somebody and telling them, "I thought that was a great piece of audio drama," and letting them know that you've enjoyed their work, because people really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, the last time I left a review on iTunes was probably Lock and Key. Or Age
which
one.
Wasn't even on iTunes.
Was it not? Oh, no, it was on
yeah,
the other
Audible.
One. Audible. Yeah, no, on iTunes, I guess it would have been Hadron Gospel Hour. And that was a little while ago. So I hate iTunes, in my defence.
It's not good.
I hate it.
It's not a good platform. But
so maybe that's a thing then. If you've got an audio drama and it's available in a variety of places where you can leave a review, then make people aware of that. Don't expect them to just leave it on iTunes, because some people hate iTunes. You say it takes a minute. It takes 10 minutes to load iTunes on occasion. All right, I'm going to stop talking about it. But I have gotten in touch with people recently, in fact, to tell them that I enjoyed their stuff, probably because I can know them through our forum, in fact. But instead of just telling them in a private message, I could carve my initials on the wall of the world somewhere to tell everyone that I really enjoyed this show. Maybe I should do that more often.
Yeah, last thing really on community is to promote the shows that you like. Tell others about them when you've heard something that you've really enjoyed. Again, we've seen really good examples of this recently on Sundays now, because there's the Audio Drama Sunday hashtag that does the rounds all day on a Sunday. And it's been excellent. I've really enjoyed following it. There's so many shows that I've never heard of, which is brilliant, because, you know, it's an opportunity to check out all this new stuff. And now and then you find a diamond as well, which always really excites you. So promoting stuff you enjoy. And again, it makes the creator of that show feel good, because someone appreciates their work and they're sharing it with other people.
Yeah, we had a few people over the years get in touch with us just on a one-to-one basis and say, "Oh, I enjoyed Aftermath." And we're like, "Oh my God, yes.
Someone listens.
Someone likes it. Someone's listening." Yeah, that one person, that's enough. That's all we need. Could it be more, though? So, yeah. Something I'm wary of on the forum as well is people that join the Audio Drama Production podcast group forum thing. And they come in, and straight away it's, "Hey everyone, why don't you listen to my show? Bye now." And I think,
yeah, hello would have been nice.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at least buy me a drink, sailor. However, if you want to promote someone else's show purely because you've listened to it and you like it, please, please, please do. I would really encourage you to do so, because you're talking about it not just to blow your own trumpet, because it's a genuine and honest appraisal of that show. So do that. Yeah, that'd be good. Thank you.
So we've touched on this already, but critique is the last C that kind of follows on from community. Critique's important, I think, to help you and others develop, because we all think that once we know something, we assume other people know it as well.
Hmm.
And this is true in any walk of life. Once you have knowledge, it's easy just to assume that everyone else has it too. There's probably someone out there working away, producing audio drama, and it's really difficult for them because they're making a mistake that you used to make, and you don't make it now because somebody told you about it or you learned it. And you just telling them that might save them loads of time. It might make their audio drama a lot better, and they'll be really thankful for it. And likewise, there's probably things that you're doing that someone else could give you a few pointers and, you know, set you on a much better path. So sharing the wealth, sharing the knowledge, but that means kind of putting yourself out there and asking for honest feedback, and not just having people tell you that it's a great show, well done.
Yeah, and don't just put it out there and say, does anyone want to listen to this? Because when you ask anyone to do something, quite often no one will. You have to ask them specifically by name. Maybe you've gotten to know someone by talking about their show a little bit, you've reviewed their show, or you've promoted it for them because it's good, then they'll be much more likely to take on board a request from you to listen to your show and give you some advice and critique and hints and tips or whatever it requires. We were lucky enough to have some pretty big names help us early on with feedback for our show, weren't we? People like Casey Whalen, he was the first one to say to us, yeah, a lot of panning in there, you don't need it. And I've said this before on the show, but my first instinct was, no, I love panning. One minute they're over here, next thing they're over there. It's wonderful. It's a 3D image in my mind. But no, it's actually just confusing for the listener. So, very grateful for feedback from Casey. People like Julie Hovison, even Rich Matheson, as you mentioned, they got in touch with us because we got them involved in Aftermath mainly, I guess. That's a point. Get people into your audio drama to do the voices, and then they've got to give you feedback, frankly. So let us know how you get on with that kind of thing. You know, if there's something that you want feedback on yourself, like a feedback on getting feedback, how about that?
Well, I think a good tip here is the sort of mastermind model, and that would involve you finding maybe three or four, well, at least a couple of other people who are at a similar level than you. And what you want to do is get together on Skype every fortnight. And what you'll do is take one of the people in the group. They'll be sort of in the hot seat, they call it. So it's your opportunity then to ask everyone a load of questions. Maybe you've set it up so that over the last couple of weeks, the other people in your group have had the opportunity to listen to your latest show. So they'll be coming back with feedback for you, and you could question them about it, they could put it to you. And it's all private as well, because I think a lot of people worry about their feedback, their critiques being public, because maybe they think their audience might see it and that might highlight some flaws in the production and their reputation might suffer a wee bit from it. Rightly or wrongly, I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's another discussion altogether. Doing this mastermind model on Skype keeps it all behind closed doors, and I think people feel a lot more comfortable with that.
Mm.
And yeah, you'll be in the hot seat on one of these sessions, and then you'll agree with the other people in your group, okay, it's her shot next week, this is the show that she's put out, we'll all listen to it, we'll reconvene in 2 weeks' time, and then we'll do the same thing again. And if you've got people that are all at a similar level, you know, maybe somebody's just a wee bit further ahead, somebody's just a wee bit newer to it, just a good balance of people, a good balance of skill sets as well. Maybe somebody's quite a strong writer, somebody else is quite an experienced producer. If you could find a group like that, I think you'd have a lot of success with it. It's not something that we've done, but it is definitely something that I'd recommend to people nowadays. And, you know, if anyone does something like that as well, or is planning to do it, please get in touch and let us know how you've got on with it.
Yeah, please do. Shall we go on to other business?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. What have you been listening to recently then?
Oh, for me, I was listening to Small Town Horror.
Heard of it.
Really enjoyed, yeah. Ars Paradoxica, another excellent show, which is... you can't move anywhere online without somebody mentioning that now. It's getting a lot of traction. The Bright Sessions, I was listening to that. I put you onto that, Robert. I was saying some of the acting in that is as good as I've ever heard in audio drama. It was just phenomenal. One of those shows where you forget you're listening to a performance, and when it finishes, you realise that you have...
Yeah, you're in the car and you're in a ditch because you've taken your eye off the road.
I think that's just a great example of quality audio drama. When you forget you're listening to audio drama, the act in that is phenomenal.
Yeah, I listened to 8 episodes in a row on the way home the other night. It's worth pointing out as well that The Bright Sessions is basically just 2 people in a room.
Yeah.
Low production values, not in terms of low quality, but low requirement.
Mm-hmm.
2 people in a room. One's a psychiatrist, the other one is the client, if you will, or the patient, who's talking about whatever's going on with them. I won't tell you any more than that, dear listener, but you should check it out. Really absorbing, really good.
Yeah, it's Misha of Ars Paradoxica who's doing the sound for that now, the production.
Goodness, really?
I might meet him next month in Los Angeles, give him a big cuddle, kiss him on the mouth. Maybe nice. He won't like that.
Well, only one way to find out.
Just a cuddle. Hi, Misha.
Play it by ear.
He's not coming now. Right. What else have I been listening to? The Winnebago Warrior, which is brilliant. That's Austin and Dane's show.
Cool.
It's a really funny show. The writing in it's absolutely great. I was having a good old laugh at it.
Excellent.
And production wise as well. I mean, all the shows I've mentioned, really strong writing, really strong production. That's why I've been listening to them, I suppose.
Small Town Horror, I've seen that pop up a lot as well.
Yeah, again, fairly new, but it's the type of show that's getting a lot of traction now. It's what people are looking for. Very accessible.
Presented as real or found footage.
But like I say, it's accessible. It's not trying to drown you in details. It kind of leads you by the hand without being patronising, without being condescending. These are just great stories that you could get right into straight away, and I think that's why they're doing so well.
Yeah, it realises that audio isn't for everyone yet, and it's trying to bring people in gently, I guess.
Yeah, it really backs up what... And again, I know there's different opinions to this, and I'm not on one side of the fence or the other, but when we had Eric Nazuma Audible on the show, and he was very much about keeping things... not simple story-wise, but making sure that you're not losing the listener anywhere.
Yeah.
And shows that are doing that are the ones that are having the success at the moment.
I guess the same as with film. Imagine if you'd never really watched or experienced any entertainment that was visual, like moving pictures, like film, and then the first film you ever watch is The Matrix or Apocalypse Now or something really deep, like any Stanley Kubrick film. You'd think, I don't even know what my name is anymore. I don't know what's going on. Is this real? What am I looking at here? You would be completely lost and you would be turned off from the medium. So it's all good and well that you start off with, well, I mean, we're brought up on TV, aren't we? Kiddies programmes and whatever. So maybe that's the thing to think about, that most people out there don't listen to audio drama. Out of the 7 billion people in the world. So these shows... We speculated about this before, didn't we? That these types of shows, these presented as real stuff, that's the way in for them. People like audiobooks, maybe, and then going to listen to something like Lock and Key or maybe even Edict Zero, which has nowhere near the fan base it should. It's just too much for the uneducated ear to take in, perhaps. Inexperienced even. I'll get there eventually. So, yeah, something to think about. Maybe that's why these shows are popular and... Maybe they deserve our full support. They've got mine anyway.
Me too. What else you been listening to?
We're Alive.
Lockdown. I'm still saving it. Saving it for the plane.
Oh, you won't believe it at the end when... Oh, nope, sorry. This isn't the Game of Thrones podcast. Yeah, we had a live lockdown. Very, 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 very good. Small cast. Still got decent production values, even though not a lot's needed. Very interesting. Six episodes. It is six, isn't it? I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's a self-contained story set within the universe of the original programme, We're Alive, which had something like 8 million episodes. So, yeah, I would absolutely recommend Lockdown to anyone, even if you haven't heard We're Alive. I've also been listening to Iron Horses Can't Be Broken. Very good as well, set in the Wild West of yesteryear. I'm enjoying it very much. I've only heard a couple of episodes so far, but I'm going to stick with it. Alba Salix, again, heard a couple of episodes. Excellent. It's stuff I've heard about ages ago, and I'm trying to now catch up. And now that I'm listening to audio drama regularly again, suddenly there's like Small Town Horror, Ars Paradoxica, The Bright Sessions, Winnebago Warrior, and so on. And it's like, oh God, right, where's all this good stuff coming from all of a sudden? But as I say, I have been listening to The Bright Sessions, and I love it, and I'll get back to that. Come to think of it, I need to get back to The Behemoth as well, because I listened to all the episodes that were out and then thought, right, I'll go back to it in a couple of weeks when I can listen to a few on the trot again. So there's another one. Let me make a note of that. And I've also been listening to a Scottish podcast.
Well, that's our mini-series that we've mentioned already. I must say, it's not for everyone. and it's not designed to be.
And why is it not for everyone?
It's funny that the language, I feel like I should say it's overly explicit. And yeah, I suppose when you record it, it is, but it's just everyday conversations in Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It looks a lot worse when it's written down, and it maybe sounds a lot worse when it's recorded, but it's just kind of real, as real dialogue.
Yeah.
Which is something that I wanted to do for a while.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like in The Walking Dead, you won't notice the absence of certain explicit sexual swear words until something really terrible happens. One of the characters says to the other one, "Screw you!" It's like, that's not what you want to say, is it? Come on now. No, but you're absolutely right. In everyday life in Scotland, particularly, I think Australia is similar in terms of the certain words that are used and the context, which isn't as harsh as it would be anywhere else. You know what I'm talking about there, the old FNC words. A lot of people just use them almost purely incidentally. Like, it doesn't mean anywhere near as bad a word as it probably does in the States. And it doesn't always translate well. Like, wow, these two are... My word, I'm disgusted. Harumph, yeah, good sir.
a Scottish podcast, if you're interested in checking it out, you'll find it on our site, audiodramaproduction.com. There's a wee subsection there for a Scottish podcast, and it's basically a story about two people that Robert and I play, who are making a Black Tape style podcast, a paranormal investigation podcast. The characters aren't based on us. I'd like to say they're not as likeable as us. Maybe people will disagree with that.
But I'm pretty sure my character is not as likeable as me. I'm not saying there's a big margin involved, but yeah, my character is loathsome.
They've got their flaws, but
I'm enjoying playing him all the same, because occasionally he'll have a pop at something in popular culture that I agree with, so that's fine. Yeah, we don't swear as much as they do in real life either, but we do swear on occasion, and I'm very sorry about that, Mum.
Yeah, I heard too, Robert, that you've read the first book of your life. It's called Out on the Wire. I recommended it to you recently.
Yeah, it was really good. The good thing about it, of course, it's full of pictures, so that helped.
Jessica Abel is the author of that book. Ira Glass as well is involved, so it's the NPR folks.
Yeah.
This is a book. It's done sort of as a comic book, but it's about storytelling and an audio form, I suppose. It's really designed towards storytelling in a documentary form. But again, we've spoke today about a lot of the shows that are doing the kind of documentary model and having a lot of success for it. This book would be a valuable read for anyone, even if it is a straight-out audio drama that you're doing. I think there's some incredible insights in there.
Yeah.
And it's such an accessible book. You can read it, you know, in a couple of nights, because it's like reading a comic, isn't it?
Yeah, because they put themselves, the writers of the book, put themselves in the comic, and like there's a little comic drawing of What's her name again? Jessica Abel. Goodness. I have read the whole thing, obviously. Yeah, so Jessica's in the book and she's like sort of holding a microphone and talking to the reader. But I would absolutely say that if even if you are just a straight-up audio drama producer, then this book is definitely worth a read. It gives you invaluable insights like how when you're interviewing someone for a documentary, for instance, when you're getting them to recount something dramatic that happened, something that's interesting, and therefore the type of thing that you would want to put into a story, when you get down to them retelling the dialogue that happened between them and somebody else in that pivotal moment in the story, that's when you've hit pay dirt, you know. And it's that kind of thing that makes you think, yeah, okay, this is getting down to the nub of what makes a story interesting, what's dramatic, where's the conflict, where's the fear, the hope, the joy. It is a wonderful book for storytelling. It's about stories more than it is about making factual docudramas or whatever. So even though you're making fiction, don't think for a second this book isn't for you. It's totally brilliant, mate. I think you should listen to it. Listen to it? What you could do is read it with your eyes. That's the funny thing. I mean, I was saying that the other day as well. It's interesting. It's about radio, it's about audio, and it's done in a visual medium. I think it's genius the way they've merged the two media for this project.
Yeah, out on the wire, Jessica Abel. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, in case you want to check that out.
Yep.
Moving towards the end of the show, just wanted to, well, I've mentioned already, I'm going to be out in San Diego and LA in a couple of weeks' time of recording. That's going to be June, all of June, really,
yeah,
as far as this podcast is concerned. So, yeah, we're having a wee meet-up in Los Angeles on the 12th of June. That's a Sunday. So if that's an area that you reside, if it's an area that you'll be in at that time, get in touch with me. Get in touch at podcastaudiodramaproduction.com. There's a Facebook events group that was EC Bond that set that up. So I don't know if it's public though, so you might need me to give you a link. So just email me, podcastaudiodramaproduction.com. If you want to meet up, we can pat each other on the back, drink beer.
Sadly, I'm not going to be there for that one. But I am going to be in London in a couple of weeks. That's almost as good as San Diego, right? Right?
Yeah, you'll be at New Media Europe. We just found out today that we are, I think it's finalists. It says stage two. I'm counting that as the finals,
yeah,
of the awards for this podcast. It's the Audience Appreciation Awards. So all you have to do is go onto the New Media Europe Awards page and you click on our podcast name and it writes a tweet for you and then you just tweet it and that counts as a vote, apparently. Yeah. Please do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, please, especially since I'm going to be there anyway. I would very much love for us to at least come close to winning it. Normally, I'm not that fussed about awards, you know, because there's often a lot of work to go into it purely from the people who want to win the award, you know, if you vote for yourself enough. But this is a really prestigious, it's not just audio drama, it's podcasting in general. I would really, really, really be happy if we won. I would genuinely start sending out Sister Act 2 DVDs to people that wanted them. I would, I promise.
Yeah, if you've got a Twitter account, you could help us out there. Again, links in the show notes and instructions on how to give us a wee vote there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because, like I said already, I'm going to be out in America for a few weeks, that means there'll be no podcast in June 2016. It's just going to have to take a wee summer holiday, isn't it? So we'll be back in July. I'm sure you won't miss us too much.
Can I finish on a funny story?
Yeah, go for it.
I told my dad that I'm going to London in a couple of weeks for work, and I've not really been that many places for work for a while in different jobs I've had, but I was kind of proud of the fact I'm flying down to London for work. And he just went, your brother's going to China with work. And that was it. That was the end of the conversation. Like, is he? Right. Thank you. So, there you go.
Shot down in flames.
He didn't even look at me. Just, your brother's going to China. So I guess the moral is, don't judge your life by the standard of other people's, because you don't know what journey they are on. You don't know how they got there or what they're having to deal with. merely deal with the hurdles in front of yourself and give yourself well-defined goals and be the best person you can. I love
you. What an inspirational end to the podcast.
That's right.
Yeah, that's us. Like I say, we'll be having a month off for the summer holidays, so have a good one. You could still get in touch with us, of course, throughout that time.
Yeah.
And we hope you do. And let's get out in the sun.
Yeah.
And take care of yourself. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a good job. And stick in.
Yeah. And keep listening to stuff. Promote it on Facebook. And stay in touch.